Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, guess who's on the show today, Jim?
Who's that?
Mike Snyder.
That guy keeps crawling back to us. All right, Patrick, we have an old dear friend. Someone who has been on the show many times and was on the old show with us, and we've known for quite some time, and we go hang out at his house in better times, and we drink lots of beer with him, and all that, right? So listeners probably have already guessed by now. It's Mike Snyder.
It's Mike Snyder, yeah. A man who's been there since before the beginning, probably.
Yes.
So how are you, Mr. Snyder?
I'm doing good. Good to see you guys. I like being dear friend. I don't like about the old part, but I guess it is what it is.
We embrace
right?
it. We're fine with it. It's very on brand for the show, I think. So that's right. Fine.
Okay, well, then all right. Yeah. I'll buy into it.
All right, so the show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I mentioned Mike Snyder is with us. We're all gathered in our respective homes, but we see each other on the Zoom thing, on the computers here. It's a... What a time to be alive. That's what I have to say. And we mentioned the beer. So what do you guys have going before we get started with this episode?
Well, I'll tell you, I have a pernicious indie IPA, pernicious indie pale ale from Wicked Weed Brewing in Asheville, North Carolina. And one of the first times I wanted to drink a couple of those in Mike's honor, I was at the shop and I thought I'll get a six of this because listeners who have been around, you know, since Mike's been hanging out with us, know about the famous trip we took down to South by Southwest. And that's when I truly began to understand Mike's passion for beer, because he did amazing interviews and reviews of breweries, but also dropped a lot of money over at Wicked Weed. And that really impressed me, too. And we had good stuff to drink every time he's been around. So
we had to go make like a special run because they were holding things for him.
We needed like a bigger vehicle.
It was amazing.
To get everything in there.
Mike is the beer expert at USA Today. He writes about the beer there. So, Mike, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I'm drinking a local beer from Fairwinds Brewery in Lorton, Virginia. Uh-huh. And it's their Oktoberfest, and they call it Naughty Fest, N-A-U-T-I, like nautical fest, not like naughty by nature type thing. So, it's a very good Oktoberfest. They're a good brewery in Lorton. They've got a real cool outdoor thing if people in Northern Virginia want to go check them out. One of the brewers there was originally at my Beer Heaven from that closed in Falls Church.
Amen.
Mad Fox.
Rest in power.
So, but they carry on there. So,
and they have a real nautical theme because they're right there near the Occoquan River. There's a lot of boats and stuff around there. It's a great place.
Yep, cool. It is.
All right, I'll tell you guys a quick little story here. I have this, I don't know who makes this. I'm sure it's some big brewery, but it's something called St. Archer Gold. And look at this. Mm. It says the ultimate light beer. See that right there? The ultimate light beer. It's actually, it's not bad, but if you ever, you know how you go to like a, you know, clothing store or something like that, and they have like out of season clothes and it's like on a clearance rack. Or, you know, like at the Home Depot, like the old, like Christmas decorations in, you know, in January or on clearance and all that stuff, right? Well, at my supermarket down the street here, they had a table set out. I've never seen this before. They had a table set out with beer on clearance. It said clearance, 50% off. And they had just a bunch of stuff, I guess, that they're not going to carry anymore. So I picked up this light beer because in the pandemic, I got to drink more light beer. And, and I got these for like $7.50 a 12 pack. I bought them out. I bought all their remaining stock. I'm not even kidding.
You guys got anything in the back?
That's right. That's right.
You can just have them ship the next pallet to my house.
But I've never seen beer on clearance. Have you guys ever seen that? Is there?
Well, you know, the thing is that as these seasonal beers come in, they need to make room.
That's probably what it is. Because I got all the pumpkin beers and stuff, right?
That's right. Yeah.
The other thing is, I mean, I haven't checked on this. That brewery is owned by Miller Coors.
And this
may be, they may be giving up on lighter beers and going to seltzers.
This could be a discontinued product or something like that. So I'll be the last guy. I'll be the last guy drinking this St. Archer Gold here at my house.
That's when Jim went blind. He was drinking that really old case of St. Archer's Gold.
That's right.
I've had that. It's pretty good.
It's not bad. All right, so where are we here? It's a patron episode. That's why Mike is on. Mike is one of the supporters of the podcast, and from time to time, he comes on the show. I mean, we'd have him on anyway, but he comes on and he picks a topic and we discuss the topic he wants to talk about. And so what is the topic today, Mike?
Well, as you and probably other listeners, regular listeners know, I'm a big fan of Tom Petty. And this, well, about now, by the time you listen to this, there will be a special release of the album Wallflowers, which came out in 1995. And it's a special reissue and collection called Wildflowers and All the Rest. And this comes in multiple versions, but it has, depending on which one you buy, it has that's a second album of songs that Tom Petty originally envisioned Wildflowers to have. He thought it was going to, he wanted it to be a two CD release back in 1995. So it has that second album of songs. Then it also has an album of home demos he made in this period of 1992 to 1994. I think I said Wildflowers came out in 95. It's 1994.
94, yep.
And then there's also another album of alternative songs and rarities that haven't, some have been out before, but most have not. And then they went through the live recordings that the Heartbreakers did over, you know, 20 plus years and put together a set of songs related to Wildflowers. They're either on Wildflowers or they were recorded about the same time that Wildflowers was being made. So this big set is coming out, and I wanted to talk about, because I wrote a story for USA Today, which is on usatoday.com, but I got to talk to Mike Campbell, Ben Mott-Finch, Ryan Ulliate. I may be bastardizing his name, Ryan, I'm sorry. He's the longtime engineer, and he was the producer of the project, and Tom Petty's daughter, Adria. So it was a fun story to do. I mean, it was bittersweet, but it was a really informative and interesting time talking to them and I got to listen to all the music too.
Yeah. Okay. So let me tell the listeners. By the time you hear this episode, this deluxe edition will have been out for a few days if this gets scheduled as planned. So just know that we have not heard it yet, Patrick and I, because it's not out yet. And so Mike is just going to tell us a little bit about what he heard. But I will just say one thing I'm intrigued by already. Is I know deluxe editions and anniversary editions and all the expanded editions of albums are a big thing right now. It's how a lot of artists are picking up, you know, some extra revenue these days, and God bless them for it. But I just find a lot of them to be kind of lazy. It's just like re-release the album, you know, spruce up the packaging a little bit, and then just dump a bunch of demos on there as like a second disc or whatever.
Totally.
And that's it. This sounds like it has real purpose to it and real thought put into it. And so I appreciate that. And that's something I think I would enjoy.
It is. And I agree. I mean, I actually, before I even knew I was going to get to do a story on this, I pre-ordered this like as soon as I knew it was coming out and bought the 5 CD edition. I'm not yet a vinyl devotee like many of our listeners. I just don't have the room. But I wanted to hear all this stuff. And you know, a lot of times you think about home demos and they're really rough. Well, these are, I wouldn't call them immaculate, but they're ready to listen to. Tom Petty recorded these by himself at his home. You know, he played all the instruments and they're really incredible. So if you're a fan of Tom Petty or Americana music, I guess, or singer-songwriter stuff, I mean, I would highly recommend it.
Okay, cool.
Well, and what I'll contribute here is that, as Jim said, yes, this has become a very, you know, kind of in vogue thing to do lately. And I can understand the reasons why, both from a revenue generating perspective and also for hardcore fans who now, right, guys, we expect to be able to dial up. I mean, we were just talking about before we turn the microphones on movies, like I should be able to dial up anything, right? When I read about it or get in the mood. And, you know, as someone who's messed around a tiny bit with music too, and done you know, a lot of interviews for this podcast and other things. I think what's interesting about this to me is there are three distinct periods, I think, for songs and for a project. And one is the whole time you're creating the project, right? How is the project created? Is it, you know, is it fully created and brought in? Is it developed in the studio, right? What is the genesis, right? And then there's the actual recording and creation of the record that will stand as, well, used to stand as the main monument and pretty much does. And then there's the treatment of those songs on stage live after you're done with them. What do you rethink? What do you feel like maybe you didn't do right? How do the songs change based on audience reaction? So to me, it sounds like a very tantalizing prospect. But I guess I would ask you, Mike, where do you rank Wildflowers, you know, in the Petty sort of catalog to begin with? And, yep. And you know, how do you kind of place it?
Well, it's hard. It's kind of like, you know, like people say, picking their own children. Since I don't have any children, I have a lot of CDs. you know, this is probably one of his three albums I turn to all the time. Mm. Damn the Torpedoes is probably the one I turn to the most. But, you know, Wildflowers... And one thing we could talk about is it had 15 songs on it.
Yeah.
So it's almost, depending on, you know, like in the old days when you had 30 minute albums, you know, it's almost a double album in itself.
Right.
But there's just so many, the songs are different and they are more, you didn't think they were personal, but when you look at what Tom Petty was going through at the time in retrospect, you know, even he came to say these were really personal songs I had to get out. That's why I think it's one of those albums that just sticks with you. And I've had, you know, one of my best buds, you know, just today said, I asked him a question about the story I was writing. He goes, I just listened to Wildflowers today. You know, so
yeah,
it's definitely in his top, you know, and it fits in. I didn't look at what other albums he had in the revamped Rolling Stone top 500 albums, but it's at like 210 or 212.
Is it really?
Something.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's with, I mean, I don't know if you looked at that list. It's obviously been updated for the times. It's much more diverse than the previous 500 album.
Sure. Yeah,
this
sure.
was.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he, that this album by himself was up there, I think is a good save. And the way it was made, it sounds as fresh today as it did when it came out.
Mm.
And so that helps it stand the test of time. It doesn't have a lot of production value on it. Some people might not like the Jeff Lynne production values on Full Moon Fever and on Into the Great Wide Open.
Right.
Those may not age as well. I mean, I love those albums too.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I love the songs, you know, because they're Petty songs. They're great songs. But I do think there is something kind of dated about that production that he had on those records. Whereas this was Rick Rubin, who just has the touch. He knows how to bring out the best in artists. You know what I mean? It doesn't sound necessarily like a Rick Rubin record.
Right.
It sounds like the best version of that artist's, you know, work, right? And he's really an expert at that. And this was also Petty's, he just changed labels at this time too. He went to Warner Brothers for this. So he was kind of renewed in a way, right?
Well, in fact, these recordings began before MCA knew he was leaving. He was upset because they had not wanted to put out Full Moon Fever, if I remember right. And so somehow he got in a dinner with the folks at Warner and they said, well, why don't we just sign a contract and we'll put it in the box. And once you get that last album for MCA, you can be with us. That's how Rubin found out about that from Warner Brothers. And somehow he'd said he'd wanted to record Petty after listening to the albums that Jeff Lynne had done. And it was interesting. They kept working together afterwards, you know, because you know, Rubin did the Johnny Cash stuff. And in the end, the Heartbreakers, some of them ended up working on an album with Johnny Cash.
That's right.
Yep. So you mentioned Rubin, and this will give you a chance to talk about, you know, what some of the musicians said. I mean, Mike Campbell, who first it was just Mike Campbell and Tom. So Mike Campbell said, you know, Tom said he had some songs and just wanted to kind of work on them. And him and Rick Rubin started, and Rick Rubin came in. And this was after they had played a few songs with the Heartbreakers. And Tom wasn't happy with that sound. And Tom basically said, you know, I really don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again. That's why he didn't want Jeff Lynne to produce this album, because he just didn't want it to sound the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they started working on the songs, and Rubin would say, you know, now let's try this song like, and Mike Campbell said, let's try it like a waltz. Now, he didn't say what song, he said try as a waltz, but he'd say he would try these songs 4, 5, 6 times just to see if things could turn out differently. And that would push, it would kind of be like stretching the muscles of the musicians in a way. And they would come up with different things. And that ended up working pretty well for Petty, that because they had recorded what was going to be Mary Jane's Last Dance. It was called Indiana Girl at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Rick wrote this in the book that comes with the set, because I didn't get to talk to him, but he said, Tom said, you know, I think I could do this just a little bit better. And he changed the name to, let, you know, Mary Jane's Last Dance, and reworked the song a little bit so it wasn't just Indiana Girl. Anyway, that goes to your point about Rubin being able to get the best out of these folks when they got in the studio, and the results, you know, show for themselves.
Right.
Totally. And, you know, one thing I think about Rick Rubin from what I've listened to and what I've read, was that he always wanted to do exactly what you said, Mike. He always wanted to see what the potential of these musicians were. And I remember a quote from Bob Dylan a long time ago where he said, when he was recording Blonde on Blonde and Highway 61 and things like that, where he was really in his zenith, he wanted to push all the session musicians off balance a little bit to see how they would recover. And I think a lot of times, you know, when you get thrown off balance a little bit, or, you know, you get surprised, that's when your instincts take over and you go back to what you believe in. And I think that's what Rick Rubin always seemed to do great as a producer, is to really kind of find out what's your true instinct here, and, like, you know, what do you really want to do with this song? So I love that he wanted to try those things as like a waltz and like different things. That seems so, you know, invigorating and inspiring, and definitely probably something that some producers don't do that. You know, they just sort of go with, you know, what kind of the artists want, right? And they let them sort of reign, but to push them off balance and do that, it sounds amazing.
Yep.
Well, do you want to listen to, maybe we could start with a home recording of Wildflower,
sure,
so people can hear what that sounded like, you know, where Petty was coming from at the outset.
That's a great idea.
Wildflowers, you belong on a boat out at sea. Sail with, kill all the hours. You belong somewhere, you feel free. Run with, find you lover.
So you can hear that sounds pretty much almost like the finished product,
without
some slight backing musicians. He has a few filler words he throws in because he doesn't have everything done. But that was kind of where he's coming from. You know, in the end, you're going to have Mike Campbell come on. You're going to have, you'll have the new drummer, Steve Ferroni, who was kind of just brought in. They were trying out drummers when they were doing the work on these songs. Once they got to, went to Sound City, the famous studio in LA. And once Steve Ferroni came in, they're like, oh, this is our guy, is kind of how Ben Montinch said Mike and Tom and Rick Rubin's eyes lit up. Because, you know, he had a different background than rock and roll, typical rock and roll drummers. Kenny Aronoff came in and played on a few songs, which are on here. You know, when he had been with, or he's, I'm not sure what verb tense I should use. He was a longtime drummer for John Mellencamp.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that song, you know, he pretty much had that one done. Some of the other home recordings were not quite as finished and took quite different looks or had different feels in the end. For instance, like Crawling Back to You, you know, has a different speed to it. And I guess the way they describe it, it gets a little spookier sound on the finished version. But then there's also songs on the home recordings that don't even show up in other, you know, on other albums. So, for instance, the home recordings has a song called There Goes Angela, parentheses, Dream Away, which they put out early, and most people may have heard that already. You know, that song, evidently, he just recorded and didn't really tell anybody about it. I mean, Mike Campbell said he heard it once, but Benmont said he'd never even heard it. And the engineer, Ryan Ulate, said he was just transferring these tapes, and all of a sudden this song he'd never heard popped up. That is a, can't think of the right adjective for it, but it's a really beautiful song, you know, about, you know, someone trying to find their freedom, which is a constant theme of Petty's music.
There goes Angela down 16th Avenue, going to the store Sunday afternoon. So dream away, my love, let your heart be free. And if ever someone should break your will, have a dream on me. Have a dream on me.
How many new songs are there? How many songs are there on this that people have not heard before?
I did not add this up, but there's probably, so it depends on if you're talking about
right.
a song you've never heard. I think there's probably about, if you're a Tom Petty completist, there's probably 10 songs you've never heard
wow.
before.
Wow. Mm.
But then then there are live versions of songs you've never heard before.
Yeah.
Then there are alternate versions of songs that are quite different. So, you know, I could go into like a couple of the highlights I have are, there's a live version of, hang on, let me get my notes here, because there's so many songs here you have to have notes
there
to keep track of what's
time.
Going on. There's another one of the great songs that hasn't been released yet, you know, onto the streaming services, is a song called Something Could Happen. And that's the first song on the among the new songs that are on All the Rest, which is like his vision of what this was going to be as a 2-CD set.
Right.
And it fits exactly with, you know, it could have been, I think it could have been a hit. It's a little slower than, you know, a typical hit type. It wouldn't have been like a number one single, but it could have definitely been a hit for him, I think. And I think fans will really like that. But when you go to songs you've heard before, for instance, It's Good to Be King, on the live album, there's an 11-minute version.
Really?
It's kind of like a jam.
Wow.
It's jamming, you know, and you
That's
can hear
cool.
Ben Mont and Mike Campbell kind of, you know, doing some back and forth.
Love
you
that.
Know, playing around each other's, you know, playing, which, you know, Tom Petty had almost the greatest hit set he had to perform. You know, there wasn't a lot of room
for,
you know, for stuff like this. So that's great to hear. The other thing, they have a live version of Crawling Back to You. Mm. So there's like three versions of Crawling Back to You. There's the original version that you had on the first, you know, on the original release. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's an early version, you know, from the home demos. And then there's a live version, which had, which they had a couple of really good singers. They were called the Webb Sisters, serving backing vocals on that last tour. Mm. And this live version is from July, you know, right near the end of that tour. And it's incredible to hear those singers singing with him also. That's the tour I saw in a couple of days before that in Baltimore.
Hmm.
So, Patrick, it goes to you, to your statement about, you know, this idea of seeing kind of a evolutionary process of a songwriter and then of a band with a with you could listen to Crawling Back to You and say, this is how this changed. You can see how it changed over the process.
Yeah. And it's so interesting too. I mean, I think that it's hard to ever see, you know, what you're going to feel about a song after you've lived with it for a while. And especially when you've had someone like Ruben, right, come in and weigh in and give their opinion on it too. And all the other players in your band and stuff, you know, think about it. It's such a, to me, it's one of the things that keeps me coming back to music, you know, like all the time. And I think why I love live records and bootlegs and stuff like this, you know, that seems like such a fascinating project. And obviously, Mike, you pointed us toward a very, very interesting article in Rolling Stone about the Wildflowers box set that I was just perusing. It's very interesting. You know, they kind of point to the fact that Petty really wanted to, you know, make this project happen, even, you know, toward the end of his life. And I want to ask you, Mike, too, you said you were able to speak to his daughter. How was that conversation and kind of, you know, what was her perspective on kind of the whole thing and how she, you know, she participated in it?
Well, she's a creative person herself. I don't know her whole background, but she's, you know, does some, evidently works in video and does some directing, and she directed a video for Leave Virginia Alone.
Mm-hmm.
So she also helped, and the family also helped with the An American Treasure that came out a couple years ago, which was kind of an anthology, so to speak, of Petty's music. But what she said was, and then they, then there was like some legal things with all the families to agree on what was going to happen with his estate. With
of course.
His, you know. Yeah. So once I didn't really ask her about that because I didn't really care. I mean, it, they had resolved that, you know, long before I talked to her.
Sure.
So they knew, and she said her dad talked about this, and she had been to some sessions of Wildflowers. And when, and I didn't even think about this, Michael Kamen did strings for this, for some of these songs on Wildflowers. So she had heard her dad talk about this several times over the ensuing years. You know, when they'd have a break between touring and things, he would say, we got to get to work on this. And that's what all these, you know, Mike and Ryan, the engineer who produced this, this set, said, Tom really wanted this to happen, and he had actually sequenced the second album the way he wanted it. And then had been talking about taking Wildflowers on tour after this box set came out in a different way, you know, like a smaller venue type show. Cause these songs are not like arena rockers, all of them. You know?
Right.
I mean, there's some on there, like You Wreck Me.
Tonight we ride, right or wrong. Sail on a radio song. Rescue me. Should I go down? If I stay too long in trouble town. Oh, yeah. You wreck me, baby. Yeah, you wreck me in two. But you know me, honey. Yes, you do. Not again.
dad are, you know, could do it. But he wanted it to be different. And he thought, he even talked about having, you know, other singers along with him to sing some of the songs. So, but she was really wanted this to happen. You could tell. I mean, I know his wife wanted this to happen. She helped find some of the demos. And they just knew this was a project they wanted to get done. There was more stuff coming from the estate, but she called the home demos. I don't know if this will make the cut of my story, but she said it was the most beautiful thing they'll ever put out.
Wow.
So all of them were, you know, it was a group effort to get this done because it's, there's just on the alternate tracks, I think there's 61 hours of tape to listen to.
Wow.
And then there's 100 plus versions of some of the live songs.
Wow.
That he had to listen to find the right one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of mind-blowing to me. I don't know how you feel, Jim, but I just never, you know, really thought of Petty as a guy that would, you know, be, I don't know, I don't want to say meticulous. That's the wrong word, or a perfectionist. But, you know, I kind of felt like he always had the idea in him, right? It was just like, hey, guys, let's get together and kind of knock it out, you know, and if it feels right, it feels right. You know, kind of like Dylan, I guess, or, you know, somebody like that. You know, or John Lennon, right? He kind of knew when he had the vibe. And this is, it's fascinating to me. I mean, it's just going to be a treasure for Petty fans and, you know, people that have followed his career for so long.
Well, in some ways it's almost, you look back on it at the time, what was happening at the time. And, you know, he had, his band was in disarray somewhat because if people that are Petty files probably have already read these, but there's two really good books. Petty, the biography written by Warren Zanes,
yep,
who was with the Del Fuegos, came out 4 or 5 years ago. That's a great book. And then there's a book called Conversations with Tom Petty by Paul Zola, who was, I don't know if he still is, but at the time he was the senior editor for American Songwriter. But you can get a background of what all he was going through. There is a power struggle between drummer Stan Lynch and Petty. Mm-hmm. Petty was just gotten tired of that. And then Petty was having trouble at home. His marriage was crumbling. He would divorce his wife after the Wildflowers tour. He would then kind of go into a depression and begin using heroin. Mm-hmm. And he would meet a woman who would help him get over that, and they would be married in 2001.
Mm.
So when you look back at, and I forget, I think I grabbed a quote from someone that said, it was almost like he wanted to be in the studio because that was the one safe place, you know, that where things,
totally.
You know, when you're working, and then yeah. You guys probably have that same thing in our day-to-day lives. It's like, if something's going on, I'll just go work.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, when he worked, he turned out these 2 years worth of incredible stuff that we're finally getting to see at
right.
this point.
Amazing. Amazing. It's really fascinating. And, you know, I guess since you're so close to all this, Mike, I mean, how does this, you know, make you feel? I mean, what are your emotions waiting for that, you know, the whole 5-CD box set that you ordered and the book and the whole thing to come? And, you know, how are you going to think about it as a lifelong Petty fan?
Well, in a way, I've been able to handle it through work.
Yeah.
In that, you know, I've gotten to read the booklet. You know, they sent me a yep. PDF of that. I've gotten to listen to the stuff. And then writing about this, you know, I knew all that he was going through
right.
because I read these books, but I didn't know how much music he made at the time. But that is just staggering to hear.
Amazing.
This, and then to hear, you know, his colleagues, you know, that he played with for 40 years, more than 40 years, because you know they started playing with him before there was even Heartbreakers.
Right.
Say, these songs were so good. We were so happy to be working on this.
Yeah. You
know, even if it wasn't a true Heartbreakers thing, we were, you know, glad to be part of it. I will say, so when I saw the last tour, I was lucky enough to write a review, got to go down and shoot photos with my, I felt bad getting around, being in the professional's way with my three instant, you know, I had all these phones I was taking pictures with. You know, and if anybody, if it's a professor, just tell me to move if you need me to move. I'm just shooting my three songs.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could see Petty was in pain when we were watching the show. And Julie said, it looks like his back is bothering him.
Mm.
In the end, it was his hip, you know, but, you know, your body's breaking down and you just don't have all the energy you had in the past. And when you listen to Crawling Back to You, this live version, you know, from that tour, you can almost feel his voice.
Mm.
You can feel it in his voice, the pain he's feeling. That kind of hit me.
Mm.
Waiting by the side of the road for day to break so we could go down to Los Angeles with dirty hands, worn out knees. I keep calling back to you.
I will say I could give you some better words from Mike Campbell. You know, so Mike Campbell was kind of like, you know, yes, we can use that. No, we can't use that. You know, because he was like Petty's right-hand man, right?
Of course.
So he said, I'd always try to imagine Tom was sitting with me and we would listen to it. And I'd keep hearing his voice saying, nah, fuck that. I don't want anybody to hear that. And then I would say, no, you know, don't include it. Or I'd picture him saying, yeah, man, that's pretty good. That should come out. And I would say yes. You know, and then he said, but it wasn't, you know, and then it wasn't always easy. He's like, he said, there are a lot of times, it was fun to hear this music, but at times, to be honest with you, the process was very hard emotionally. I'm still grieving, but I was grieving pretty hard then. There were times I just couldn't be in the room. I just couldn't hear his voice at that moment because it was just too hard.
Right.
Said, I got through it, and I'm glad we did it, and I know he'd want this to come out, so it's a labor of love, so to speak.
Oh, that's nice.
Amazing. Yeah. Well done, sir.
All right, cool. Well, everybody check this out.
Absolutely. And if anyone wants to buy me a copy, you can send it to SuburbsPod at... No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to wait till it hits the clearance table. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. All right.
Next to the... You get a discount if you buy all the gold lager.
No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen with this one. This is probably one of those limited edition deals, right? Everybody's going to buy these up.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I bet the vinyl is for sure.
Yeah.
Yep,
they totally didn't say that, but...
Well, it's not a bad investment, folks, if you're a Petty fan. You never know.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
This is great.
Well, good to talk to you guys.
If anyone has any comments on Tom Petty or Wildflowers, or if you've heard any of this new music, we'd love to hear you talk about it. You can call, leave a message. We'll get your voice on a show. It's 612-440-1984. There you go. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those @suburbspod. And be sure to listen frequently.
Pretty much every day. And Mike, I want to thank you for being a patron. And I got to say, Jim, it feels like we should be paying Mike.
I know. It's funny.
We appreciate it, my friend.
It's always fun. It's fun to talk music with you guys, and I'm happy to support.
All right.
You're the man, the myth, the legend, and we love you dearly.
And
so
if anyone would like to learn more about being a patron of the show, you go to patreon.com/suburbspod.
That is correct.
All right. All right, Mike. Well, we'll see you soon.
Take care.
Probably be virtually, but we'll see you.
All right.
Yeah, man.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Mike Snyder.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you, brother.
Run away. Go find a lover. Run away. Let your heart be your guide. You deserve the deepest of cover. You belong in that home by and by.
Get the Jeff Lynne ones on CD, but maybe get this one on the vinyl.
That's probably right, yeah.